You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD, hour number two here. Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm, 216-578-0850. Let's go to the phone lines. We've got Derek in Cleveland. Derek, welcome to the show.
Columbus, Ohio, but it's Columbus, it's the capital. How you doing, Vinny?
In Columbus? Good. How are you?
Not too bad. Hope you're doing well today, Wilhelm.
Doing well, man. Thank you.
So I want to talk about box checking. And you guys are like, what? Like box checking? Yeah. Nathan, you've been talking about Kessler all week. And I have been agreeing with you 100%. And you've been checking boxes. You agree?
Yeah, I'm assuming you're talking about accuracy, poise, toughness, composure, et cetera.
Man, that is it. That sounds like a quarterback of the future. I know you haven't said it, and you're not, you know, going out there and saying it, but it's cool to say, man, because I'm having the conversation with a lot of fellas, you know, a lot of fans down here, and none of them are on the same, you know, they're not with me on that. And I'm like, yo, this guy has everything that we haven't seen and have been wanting in a starting quarterback. And I think that if we can build off of that, go into next year's draft and, you know, maybe get a defensive stud like the Jabril Peppers.
Yes, jalapeno peppers. I would be on board with that too, Derek. And let me tell you, this is how I feel about Cody Kessler. Blown away my expectations for him, especially coming out of the preseason. And he has shown so much. You know, he's number one. I tweeted out some stat from Pro Football Focus today. He's number one in the NFL in terms of accuracy under pressure, completion percentage under pressure. So he has done a phenomenal job. And you really look at what he's had to deal with in terms of a different center. It seems like every time that he plays quarterback, you know, never change. You know, Terrell Pryor is getting injured. Corey Coleman, he hasn't even played a snap with Corey Coleman yet, has Cody Kessler, but he's shown all the intangibles: accuracy, decision making, poise, toughness, ability to win from the pocket, make quick decisions, all the things that I think are the hallmarks of quarterback play, especially in the modern NFL. Having a big arm is very important, but it's more important to be quick with your decisions and to be accurate with the football, and he's showing the ability to drive the ball in that 15 to 20 yard range. And I talked to Hugh Jackson about it, and I said, was that a point of emphasis, getting him? Because you can see his footwork's improving, he's stepping into his throws a little bit more and driving the ball in that range. And Hugh said that it has been a big point of emphasis and something that they're very pleased Cody's been able to do. The reason that people aren't, if Cody Kessler was 6'4 and had a stronger arm and everything else he was doing was exactly the same, I think everybody would be saying, this is our franchise guy. We've got our guy.
Right. And the fact of the matter is, all those things that you've listed out on what Cody Kessler's been doing, and you talked about stepping into the throws and delivering the ball still with zip and accurate, all that's been in the face of how many different offensive line combinations and the fact that he's getting beat up as much as any starting quarterback in the National Football League, getting hit, hurried, knocked down, sacked six times this past week. All that's going on while his level just continues to go up each and every week. And that's something that experience will bring. I think there's a trust and confidence that Cody Kessler has in himself. And I think in going out and playing so well, and even in these losses, that Hugh Jackson has developed that same confidence in Cody Kessler to give him more. As I always talk about the limitations of the playbook based on young players or their inability to execute, you know, the entire playbook. Well, Hugh is giving pages and pages and pages to Cody Kessler each and every week, which makes our offense, you know, even without playmakers, much more dangerous as defenses have to prepare for, you know, our playbook. I know, and I hate to say that, because some of our players aren't out there, Corey Coleman included.
No question, and he's a guy that, you know, has done this all on the road. Other than eight passes, every career stat, eight passes, 62 yards and one touchdown, everything else he's done is on the road. By the way, I have a quick update for you from Jeff Hobson, who will join us at 2:30. Tyler Eifert goes full for the first time since the Pro Bowl. It was full in practice. We know the Browns have struggled with tight ends, although they did a very good job on Delanie Walker just last week. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. We got Steve in Oregon with us. Steve, welcome.
Hey, Nathan, Matt, how you guys doing today?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
So I've got a question for you. You know, let's say we don't like one of the top quarterbacks coming out this year. You know, we don't see a clear franchise guy out there, and we're liking what we see from Kessler. So, you know, given the holes we have on the team, You know, what would you do with the first four picks in the draft? You know, do you go pass rush, you know, corner, right tackle, center maybe? Well, what do you guys think about that? I'll let you talk.
I think, look, they've said it before, the whole key in this game is always to get that quarterback. And Cody Kessler's got a long way to go before I believe he would alter the draft plans of this team. If they don't feel that a quarterback is worth it at number one, that none of these guys falter and none of them are worth it, then they will take the best player available, or they'll make a move down and try to push that decision to 2018, where there is considered to be a great quarterback class led by Chosen Rosen out of USC. However, I still think DeShone Kizer is good. And by the way, if these quarterbacks aren't there, let's not forget the Browns have two first-round picks, so they could take a best player early and then take a quarterback later on, or move back up in that round to get that quarterback and get two birds with one stone, because they don't, not only do they have two firsts, they have two seconds as well this year, and have an ammunition to be able to move up and move around in this draft.
And I think, obviously, we know, you know, what Philadelphia has done, and I think they sit at 3-3 right now, correct? The Eagles, after starting 3-1. So have they lost? Have they lost three in a row?
Who?
The Eagles.
They've lost two in a row.
Two in a row.
They're 3-2. They had their bye.
3-2. They've had their bye. Okay, that's my mistake. But as the Eagles have, you know, their pick is going to be in the 20s as we sit right now. How that all finishes, and I think you dive into the draft, and I don't necessarily know yet, and I'm not going to speculate about what we do at the beginning of next year's draft, as we're only six games into 2016, is we not only hold that Philadelphia pick, that at right now, as I said, is the early 20s or late teens based on where they sit. That coupled with the first pick of the second round, as we would sit right now, is something that you could package to a team that's attractive to get back inside the top 15, top 12, and you have two of the top 12 picks in next year's draft.
You will, and that gives you opportunity, as you said, plenty of flexibility to go ahead. And the quarterback might not have to be the first of your two picks.
Correct.
But he can be one of those two picks, or you can get him somewhere in the first four.
And it all depends, as he just said, you know, what do we like? Say we don't like Kizer or Watson based on the way that they finish. You know, maybe they project well, but I know, and I know that your mentality on this is throw the guy in the fire. That's the best way to learn. And look at the success we're having with Cody Kessler, a third-round pick. Imagine someone who's drafted in the first round who has the bloodlines, the characteristics, the makeup. They've
size,
passed
the arm.
The size, the true. Arm, like you know, Kizer. The mentality, like Kizer, like Watson, you know, around Hugh Jackson and Pep Hamilton and weapons like Corey Coleman and Terrell Pryor and Gary Barnage and Crowell and Duke Johnson. You go, I like where we're headed. Why draft a project? You got to draft a guy that can play right now. And if you don't like those guys for whatever reason, and this organization is not sold on either two, get the third or fourth guy that you're in love with, you know, in the teens, in the 20s, or whatever it is. And as you said, take Jabril Peppers, take the Garrett kid out of Texas A&M.
Yeah.
Get the difference maker, the can't miss, as a lot of people always like to say.
And, of course, we know that even can't miss guys.
Correct.
Certainly miss. Can miss. Let's go to Tim in Brunswick now. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I was just wondering something here. You know, Cody Kessler seems to be doing a fantastic job out there, and it seems that this whole season has just gone with Jackson as a tryout basis for the Browns, it seems like to me. You know, the referees haven't been that good across the whole league, actually. They all stink, as far as I'm concerned. But I'm wondering with Kessler, why is everybody keep bugging about a quarterback and worrying about one next year? If this kid keeps going the way he is, I mean, you got your answer right there. You should concern yourself with other positions.
I agree with you. I think that is all going to come in time. But I do agree that Cody Kessler could change that narrative. Also, I think that, you know, this is a team that might say we like what Cody Kessler has, but let's get a guy who's got that ceiling that could be everything. We don't have to rush him along, but we've got Hugh Jackson here. This is the perfect environment for him to develop. Let's see what we can do. All right, back to the phone lines we go. 216-578-0850. Dan in Hershey Pod. Dan, are you feeling better today, Dan?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon. Go Browns.
Go Browns.
Go Indians.
Go Tribe.
Hey, go Tribe. There you go. I'm actually a San Francisco Giants fan, so but anyway.
That's right. I love Bruce Bochy's my guy.
Well, you know, this season thus far, from an injury standpoint, has just been the season from hell. I mean, anything that could have gone wrong in the wrong, it really has kind of happened, you know. So the thing that is a bright point, I think, is we, just as the season plays out, we're going to find out whether Cody Kessler is this guy or not.
Right.
I mean, that's great to know, I think. And God willing, he stays healthy. We're going to know by the end of the season if he's Brian Sipe or he's Joe Montana or whatever, you know, because the quarterback position is such a cerebral thing. It appears the guy's got that moxie, you know?
Yes, absolutely. And I think you make a great point, and you can hang on if you have another take. But the point thing that I want to point out is it's the Cleveland Browns as a franchise over the last 16 years have lived in the gray area. Right. And in some cases, maybe in the black or the white, whichever way you want to say is the negative. Right. And in this case, when it comes to Cody Kessler is slowly but surely locking in his future with the Cleveland Browns,
yep.
which for so many times, year after year with Whedon and with Manziel and with Hoyer, it was like, hey, let's get a bubble gum to stop this leak, you know, in the Hoover Dam, you know, and that's what these guys have been. And I'm not saying Cody Kessler's, you know, the franchise quarterback, and I'm not saying he's someone that we have to question, but what he has showed us right now is it's we can work with this.
Right, we've got
and
something.
And he's a part of our franchise. Is he the guy? No. I can't say, you know, who's going to be the guy or who Sashi Brown, Hugh Jackson thinks going to be the guy. I'm not predicting that stuff, but Cody Kessler is not going to be a part of our plans. He is in our plans because of what he has showed us through four football games that we can win if things go well. And we continue to develop this roster around a player like Cody Kessler, we can win football games.
No question.
And like I said, the question to Jamie Mitter is like, there should be two, if not three wins in that left column. And I know that's very frustrating, and the narrative about the Cleveland Browns, and especially about Cody Kessler, would be so significantly different. But that's the one thing that we can get out of the gray on Cody Kessler that we lived in the gray on with him in training camp based on his preseason performance, is that Cody Kessler can play quarterback in the NFL. You got 52 more spots for next year. Cody Kessler's going to be here.
Absolutely. And you're right. We don't know what it is, if he's a long-term starter, et cetera, but we'll see. But he has shown that he at least certainly has a role in this team, and it's turned out to be a pretty darn good draft pick. Let's go to Jason in Cincinnati. Jason, welcome.
On Nate and Nate, Matt. Yeah, I was had a question about Cody Kessler, about the release. Nate, sorry, before you've always brought up like the release, how fast they get the ball
sure.
out. I was kind of curious to how fast he gets it out, you know, so that way we can kind of get a comparison to previous quarterbacks.
Yeah, here, let me go. I'll take a look at that right now. We'll go and I'll pull that up for you real quickly here. You know, it's one of those things that is very important, the quickness that the ball comes out, and I think that that's something we know that Hugh Jackson certainly wants this team to do quickly. 2.5 seconds has kind of been the number that we've been looking at for these guys, and so here, I'm going to take a look at it right now.
And while you're drawing that up, I think, and the reason why isn't so much that, you know, you need to, you can tell your offensive line that you need to protect for a certain amount of time, or else, you know, that alarm goes off in your head. What I think was very successful for Hugh Jackson, just, and again, going back and watching the Bengals versus the Browns as I have for the last two seasons, you know, doing this show, is you allow your playmakers, and I talked about Duke Johnson, you know, versus their linebackers, your superior athletes to get the football in space. That's what getting rid of the football really means in under that 2.5 second mark. It's I've identified their coverage. I've identified the advantageous matchup that Hugh Jackson, as my offensive coordinator, or Pep Hamilton, has driven into my brain. I can then snaply make the decision and rip it to my playmaker in space so that he can break a tackle, he can pull away from that matchup, and yards after the catcher created, and find voids in the zone, or in some cases you find, you know, you beat a guy in one-on-one, there's naturally space. Because you're on that deep half safety or that middle of the field safety or that robber guy
right.
immediately as a double. So it's identifying where to go with the football and giving your playmakers who you trust the football in space.
So the answer is that Cody Kessler is getting it out about 2.65 seconds on average. He is at getting it out under 2.5 seconds, so on 54% of his passes, has a quarterback rating of 92.9 when he does that. He has a quarterback rating of 95.3 when he takes a little bit more, or 96.9, I'm sorry, when it takes a little bit more than 2.6. So his average right now is 2.65 to throw, which is the same as Josh McCown's was, and is faster than RG3, who was at 2.86 to get the football out for the Cleveland Browns. So that's where he is in relation to those guys. Let's go to Nick in Brecksville now. Nick, welcome.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
How are you?
Good. Yeah, I think you guys hit on some good points here with the Browns and the draft and the quarterback. You know, they do have a lot of picks, and, you know, as Jimmy Johnson famously said about when he traded Herschel Walker, it wasn't just about the picks. You have to get the picks right. You know, you have to hit on way more than you don't hit on. Of course, you're going to miss on some, but that's the key, is getting the right guys. But for you, Nathan, I had a question for you, Matt. For you, Nathan, I wanted to know if you know anything about Mitch Trubisky. I've watched him the last few games. I know he was here in Mentor, but I've watched him with North Carolina. It looks pretty good to me. And then, Matt, I want to know, in the locker room, obviously every player, it feels like they're very important to the team, as they should,
right,
and for the team to win. But, I mean, like, we're talking about quarterback, and it's all you really hear about is quarterback. Even if you don't have a quarterback, or if your quarterback's really good, it's quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. Do the other players just know that that's just how it is, but they know he is important, but, like, everybody's important? Or does it create some kind of does it matter how the quarterback acts?
To answer your question, you accept it after a while. And my best story that I can give you, and I know I've told Nathan before, and maybe I've mentioned it on the show before, but Norv Turner, when he was the head coach in San Diego, obviously, in Hugh Jackson's case, was not only the head coach, but he was the play caller as well. And I'm not saying that Hugh Jackson is this way, and based on all the players that we talked to, he is not this way. But it was an instance where, for whatever reason, I was banged up with some injury, you know, and I'm not saying I missed a game, but I was like, say I sprained my ankle and I was doing some ankle rehab, or I was icing my ankle and I'm in the training room. Well, Philip Rivers was in there for, say, a bruised up shoulder or a hand, or his back was bothering him. And it was a Wednesday morning, which you had to come in and get your treatment for. And Norv Turner, and I mean, mind you, any player that's on injured reserve is also in there doing their physical therapy, you know, and basically every table, and there's probably a dozen of them, are occupied by a player either icing, warming up, rehabbing of some sort, right? So
yep.
A dozen San Diego Chargers in this case are in the training room, and Norv Turner walks in, who's the head football coach and coaches 53 guys every Sunday, actually 45 that are on the active roster, and V-lines by all 12 tables to Philip Rivers in the back of the training room to talk to Philip about the offensive game plan, and Norv Turner had blinders on. It was like the other 11.
Like, I'm a real person.
It was like the other 11 tables in the training room were empty in his mind, because he had a mission in his mind to go talk to his quarterback as an offensive mind, to talk about route combinations that are going to be in the game plan and what player they want to exploit, about what they saw on film, or maybe, you know, just having a quarterback, offensive coordinator, play caller discussion. And it was, so to your point, every culture is different. And in this culture, I know that as I talk about, you know, whatever quarterback, and in this case, Cody Kessler, gets to spend, you know, the opportunity to spend time with Pep Hamilton and Hugh Jackson on a daily basis, and that greatness, that winning, that quarterback guru mentality rubs off on Cody, and I think we see that each and every Sunday over the last 4 weeks. You can also have a guy that is not your fearless leader that you'll follow into the fire, that is just so dead set on his agenda of being the offensive coordinator or play caller that your natural relationship is becoming closer with your defensive coordinator is your fearless leader. Your position coach is who you rely on for that insight and information. And that's typically, I mean, Marty Schottenheimer was a great head coach. He was a 53-man head coach, whereas Norv Turner was an offensive guy head coach. And it's like, and that's why I said my bond with Norv Turner is, you know, we'll talk to him, we'll stop and talk, but it's like, it's a very short conversation because he was entrenched in the offense and the defense was the different side of the ball. And it was, Wade Phillips got you guys. You guys are good. Go ahead. Get over there.
Right. And I think you get the sense that Hugh Jackson's going to talk to every single
person. Right. And there's
a
division in the locker room, but once you wrap your head around how you do business, you're a pro.
Right.
It doesn't hurt your feelings anymore, and you don't care. You come to work.
Hi, Norv.
You know, you'll walk down the hall, you give him a nod. It's not a stop and talk like I'm sure it would be with Hugh Jackson.
Yeah, the old stop and chat.
Correct.
Yes, indeed. All right, when we come back, Jeff Hobson will stop and chat with us from Bengals.com to give us the latest on this Cincinnati team. There ain't no
secrets anymore. You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm, in an effort to get you better prepared for the Battle of Ohio between the Browns and the Bengals. We go now to the Ohio Business Machines Hotline. OBM, Ohio Business Machines, preferred copier provider of the Cleveland Browns. Know that every day is game day in your office. Call 216-485-2000 or visit ohiobusinessmachines.com today. And we go to the OBM hotline and welcome in Jeff Hobson from Bengals.com. Jeff, good to talk with you again.
Congratulations to the Cleveland Indians. They broke my heart there in Fenway, and Tito deserves it.
He's having a remarkable run, the bullpen playing out of control, and the Tribe getting it done. Now they just need four more to bring another championship to the city of Cleveland this year, which would be pretty remarkable, all things considered, after the Cavs won one earlier this year. Jeff, I want to talk to you about this battle for Ohio. Let's start with the health of the Bengals. Any injury updates you can provide us? And I know a good one for the Bengals, bad for the Browns, but Tyler Eifert back at practice fully.
Yeah, Eifert went full tilt for the first time since he played in the Pro Bowl today. But I don't know if that, you know, I don't know if that means he's going to be ready for Cleveland or not. That's only going to be one full practice heading into that game. I don't know if they want to. I would imagine they want to give him a full week, at least a full week. But we'll see what happens. You'd have to clearly say he's questionable. Other than that, they look pretty healthy. Their center, who get thinged up. Russell Bodine got thinged up late in the New England game. Looks like he's going to be back. And you know, other than that, and Eifert, they're pretty healthy.
Jeff, I want to ask you about the running backs, and I know this team has struggled to run the football a little bit this year, but it seems they've made a shift the last couple of weeks, and now Giovanni Bernard being the primary ball carrier and starter, and Jeremy Hill kind of being more in a relief role, Bernard out snapping him basically 3-1 the last three games. Is that something that you expect to continue in that backfield?
I don't. I really don't. I think Jeremy's going to get his shots. I think, you know, he's played very well against Cleveland. He had a 100-yard game when he was a rookie, and he had his best game of last year came up in Cleveland. So I would imagine he'd get some shots this week. I think some of that has to do with, yes, Gio's been hot, and he's having a terrific year. But, you know, Jeremy's been banged up get a little bit of a shoulder problem, and I think they've been trying to be careful not to bang him, but clearly Gio's getting, as you noted, he's way ahead in the snaps, but I think there's a couple of reasons because of that, and Gio's playing well. Hill's dinged up, but like I said, I think a part of it is too, they've only been able to get one back involved because they've been behind and they haven't run it very much, and that's going to be a priority Sunday. And if their running game is going the way they want it, both guys are going to get their shots.
Yeah, and, Jeff, talk about, you know, when you guys have offensive successes you've had over the last 3-4 years, there's, of course, you know, free agency is going to nip you guys in the butt, and it has with Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones both moving on to big deals in other places. And just talk about, you know, the emergence of Brandon LaFell, who's, you know, been in the league a few years, and his production. And I guess overall my question is, production at the wide receiver position outside of A.J. Green and developing a little bit of nuance that, you know, what Hugh Jackson had with multiple weapons at wide receiver.
Well, actually, that's been a strength. I mean, as you said, missing Sanu and Jones, I thought was going to be really hard to fill because you were going with a veteran coming off an injury-plagued season and a rookie in Tyler Boyd, and you basically had five new receivers in A.J. So that's what I thought was going to be the problem. But actually, they've produced better than expected. In fact, LaFell and Tyler Boyd, the second-round pick out of Pittsburgh, they are on a pace that would be ahead of what Sanu and Jones did last year. LaFell's already got three touchdowns. Marvin Jones had four touchdowns all last year. Boyd's made some terrific plays, plus 20 yards that they weren't getting from Sanu last year. So that's been a strength. The real problem has been in the red zone. They've been going from the 20s. They just can't get into the red zone, and they can't run the ball, and they don't have Eifert. That's plain and simple.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, they're 28th in touchdown percentage inside the red zone this year, and I was going to ask you what the problem was, and you say they're struggling to run it, and no Eifert down there. And are teams, do you find, focusing more on A.J. Green this year than perhaps in years past?
Oh, I mean, I think they always do, you know. I mean, Bill Belichick always says, you know, I'm not going to let A.J. Green beat me. Most coaches do that. I bet Hugh Jackson and Ray Horton don't let A.J. Green beat him. I mean, I think that's been the way it's always been. And, and it's always been, how do those other guys step up? Except, I guess, maybe the Jets when they've let Darrell Revis cover him one-on-one, which I still can't figure that out, and Miami, too. Ray Horton and Hugh Jackson won't do that. So, I mean, that's always the key. That's why I think Dalton and Green are having terrific years, because they haven't, they're on pace to have one of their worst rushings. I mean, they're on pace to have to gain their fewest yards ever in history on the ground. And these guys, Green and Dalton, have done terrific. And, you know, teams are, they don't have to put that eighth guy in the box. You know, they haven't had to put that eighth guy in the box for a variety of reasons, and yet they're still putting up terrific numbers. So, you know, I mean, even though Green's been, even though they've been shading Green and cover two and stuff, and he's found them. And, you know, that's I mean, those numbers they've got, those guys have got without those rushing numbers, it's really something.
Yeah, yes, it is. And something that Hugh Jackson knows very well is the front seven defensively. Practicing against that front seven for the past few years. Carlos Dunlap, Pico, Atkins inside, Michael Johnson, and then the addition of Carlos Dansby as well as Mau Luga and Vontaze Burfict, who everybody knows. Just talk about how good it is to be able to have, you know, such a great front seven and the production they've got out of that unit so far.
Well, when they're rolling, they're as good as anybody, and they've struggled a little bit, you know, early in the season here. But, you know, when they're right, you know, there's no better free technique in the league than Geno Atkins.
Yep.
You know, getting pressure. You know, Dunlap is coming off a Pro Bowl season. Johnson's a solid right end. Pico, you know, gets ripped, but he's a very solid nose tackle. You know, Pat Sims is a run stuffer that people don't talk about, but you know, this has been down through the years. The last, you know, since Zimmer came in 2008 and passed the torch to Gunther in 2014. This has been a top 10 defense, and they're not playing like that right now. There's some reasons. There's been a big, you know, there's four new position coaches on defense. They didn't have Burfict for the first three games. So I think that's, you know, they've got new linebackers. You mentioned Dansby. So, you know, it's been a little bit the transition with the new coaches and some of the guys in the back end, some of the guys in the nickel package, like Dansby, Josh Shaw replacing Leon Hall. It's safety. I mean, in the slot, Sean Williams replacing Reggie Nelson. You know, it's the transition, I don't think, has been as smooth as they thought. So, you know, I think it's probably, you know, the front seven is front seven knows that Hugh is going to run it, that he's going to try and run the ball when they come in here. They'll, I think they'll know they have to dig in and have one of those dominant days that they're used to having in this building.
Last week, obviously, trouble with tight ends. No surprise, though. It's Rob Gronkowski and Martellus Bennett, arguably the best tight end tandem anybody's had, maybe in NFL history, certainly since they had Gronk and Aaron Hernandez there in New England. Is that an area of concern, kind of the coverage of Dansby and Mau Luga? Is that somewhere that you'd say is a soft spot on this defense?
Well, that's Bynage is a hell of a player. Bynage has hurt them in the past. You know, he's well-coached up there. Greg Seaman is a guy who has been with the Bengals for a long time as a scout. Long-time coaching confidant of Hugh, so you know he's well-coached. I mean, that's something they got to keep an eye on, obviously. And but I think they're thinking, you know, with the rookie quarterback up there, you know, this is the third time in a month that they've faced a first-year starting quarterback, and they get whacked each time. Simeon and Prescott put up triple-digit numbers on him. So, you know, Pryor's having a hell of a year, and Varnish can hurt you. But they got to make sure that you know that they don't get off on a running game. Right? That's really important. You know that you know, you can talk about the tight ends and all that, but if they don't, you know, if they let you get off in a running game, you know, they're going to have problems. So I think that's probably going to be the big emphasis. I mean, I think they can, you know, if they stop the run, then the other stuff will come.
Sure. And Jeff, overall, just, you know, being around that team. A veteran-laden team that it is, you know, with Marvin Lewis, who's been there, you know, over a decade. What's the mentality of them? You know, they've been close against some very good football teams, but sitting at 2-4, not the normal position for a Bengals team through six football games.
Well, they aren't panicking, that's for sure. They were in this position in 2012 when they were 3-5 and ended up winning seven of the last eight. They know that the division. They've been, you know, they've been banging heads in this division with Baltimore and Pittsburgh in the last 5 years, and you know, they know that you know, 3 weeks from now the whole world could look completely different. So I don't sense panic. I sense a little bit of but I do sense they know it's time. I do sense that they can't. I think they're really grinding to get the 4-4. They got to get the 4-4. They're 2-4 now. They get Cleveland. They've got, you know, they're worried about Cleveland because Hughes coming in, and he knows they're going to get everything they want, and they'll get Cleveland's best. And then they got to go to London to play a very good Washington team. And, you know, they got to get the 4-4, and then they get to play the Giants in New York on a Monday night. So they know that they know it's time to go, and they've been in they're the kind of team that has turned it on in the past and made it. But they know they're running out of time. So I would expect to be Sunday is a very somber mood for them, because they know, you know, they know Hugh Jackson's going to start winning games, and they know what a good coach he is. They don't want it to be Sunday.
You know, Hugh Jackson talked a little bit about, you know, they wanted to keep him there with succession plan to take over for Marvin Lewis. He didn't think that was right, and now he returns as the head coach. How has he been missed in that offense this year, and how meaningful is this kind of reunion, do you think, to the people in Cincinnati with Hugh coming back and for Marvin Lewis?
Well, it means a lot to Marvin and Hugh. They're best friends. They will both tell you that they're a reason that they're sitting where they are right now. You know, Hugh... In 2012, they hired Hugh when he got done in Oakland, and nobody else made him. Nobody else, much to Mike Brown's surprise, no one hired him after Oakland, and they grabbed him. And even though their spots were full, they felt like a good coach is a good coach, so they put him on defense. So, you know, and Hugh helped Marvin out so much in 04 and 05 and 06 when he was the wide receivers coach, and then came back and was his coordinator. So, I mean, you know. Hugh and Marvin have done a lot for each other, so that's going to be an emotional reunion, you know. And the players love Hugh, as they do up there. I mean, this is a unique guy who coached on both sides of the ball. He coached on both sides of the ball. He coached special teams that year in 2012. So I think it's a significant game. Not many guys coach against their hand-picked successor. It's only the fourth time in Bengals history where a coordinator has come back and played against his boss, you know. Last time was Leslie Frazier, and the time before that was Bruce Coslin, like 23 years before. Happens about once every solar eclipse, so it's a pretty significant day down here.
It certainly is. Do the Bengals feel like this is, when you talk about the schedule, I think for the Browns at this point every game is a must-win. Does this one take on more importance for the Bengals than a typical Browns-Bengals game?
I think in a division, you always have to win a division game, you know. I think the must thing is kind of overrated a little bit because every game's so important. But clearly the numbers suggest that they can't, the numbers would tell you that they can't go to 2-5 heading to London.
Absolutely not. Jeff, what's your prediction for this game?
I think the Bengals grind. I think Hugh Jackson throws a scare into these guys. I think it's a hell of a game. I think it's a one-play game. I think it comes down to the end. I think people are stunned, but I think Nugent, you got Cleveland, you got Cincinnati, and I think a kid from Centerville wins the game at the gun.
In the Battle of Ohio, former Ohio State kicker there. Jeff, appreciate the time as always, and see you down in Cincinnati this weekend.
Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Jeff Hobson there from Bengals.com on the Cincinnati Bengals and the Browns getting ready to do battle. All right, we've got all your Ask TFC questions ready to go. We'll answer some fantasy football start sits as we wrap up this Thursday here on CBD.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm. It's time now for the FanDuel Fantasy Minute.
Yeah,
FanDuel.
Sports rich, peeps.
FanDuel have all the fantasy that football has to offer. Be sports rich. That's right, Matt Wilhelm. We bring in our producer, Matt Fontana. Fontana, what are people talking about here with Ask TFC?
We've got a lot. Again, use that hashtag AskTFC on Twitter. We kick it off with James the Ringer. Half point PPR for a flex spot. That would be one Duke Johnson III or Jordan Howard.
Duke Johnson, Jordan Howard, or who?
Just those two. One of those two.
If it's PPR, you could go Duke Johnson. You got to go.
Half point PPR.
Jordan Howard's been the man, although.
What was the time last week?
I know, 9 carries for Kadeem Carey. But Duke Johnson, I mean, the Browns haven't had somebody run for 20 yards in a game in 2 weeks. I'm going to stick with the volume because I know if they get near the goal line, Howard's going to punch it in.
This one is from Eric. He's got to start one PPR league. James White, Mark Ingram, or Jordan Howard?
I'm going to stick with Mark Ingram.
This one's from A. Muse. Jay Rogers, Jay Howard, or Meredith. I'm sorry. He's got a lot here. It's a non-PPR. Let's start there.
Jaquizz Rogers is the answer.
Yes.
The 49ers and their defensive coordinator are trying to make history as the worst run defense in the history of the league. They tried to do it last year when it was the Browns defense coordinator, but now he's trying to do it in San Francisco. They're giving up 30 yards more rushing per game than the 31st ranked run defense in the NFL. Nearly 180 yards per game on the ground. Five straight games they've allowed a 100-yard rusher. Four straight games they've allowed a 100-yard rusher with a touchdown. Jaquizz Rogers, he's going to be the guy. He had 35 touches the last time Doug Martin was out. He's going to get a heavy workload. And right now, I think Mason Wilhelm could run for 100 yards against the 49ers.
Here's another one. Speaking of Jaquizz Rogers, for Rick, he's got a flex spot, PPR league, Mohamed Sanu, John Brown, or Jaquizz Rogers.
Jaquizz Rogers is the start of starts this week, folks.
All across.
All across the boards. If you have Jaquizz Rogers, you start him.
This one's from David. He says, first off, guys, I love the show.
Thanks,
he's
David.
Got a question about Jordan Reed possibly playing Sunday, because if not, he's got Zach Miller and would need to start him tonight.
Jordan, it looks like he is not going to play, so you can't risk it. So I think you do have to go in the other direction and go away from Jordan Reed. So go with Zach Miller tonight.
This one's from Odd the Tree Monster. He's in a 20-team PPR league, and he's got injuries. Do you think Ricardo Lewis could be worth a start and a shot in a deep league this week?
I mean, that would be a very deep league. I'd look for Cameron Meredith right now if he's on your waiver wire. Kenny Britt if he's on your waiver wire. I think those are guys that are going to turn in very solid performances.
Again, use that hashtag AskTFC on Twitter. This one is from Tom, PPR league, Sterling Shepard or John Brown?
I'm going to stick with Sterling Shepard there. John Brown has got a little bit of a hamstring injury. Didn't practice yesterday. Palmer's banged up. So I'm going to say, and they're going against Seattle.
Again, this one's coming off Twitter. This is from Eric. He's got a flex spot question in a PPR league. Michael Thomas, Marvin Jones, or Arian Foster?
Michael Thomas, Marvin Jones, or Arian Foster?
Yes. PPR league.
I go Marvin Jones first and then Michael Thomas second.
I'll use that hashtag AskTFC on Twitter. This is our last one. This is from Tom again. This is a quarterback question. He wants to know Matt Ryan or Blake Bortles this week. I think that's a pretty
easy. I think I'm going to go with Matt Ryan there.
I've got a question of my own there, old fantasy guru.
Yes.
Okay, this is for my Fire League. This is for my Fire League. So it's basically ATQ, any two quarterbacks this week. Money's not an issue.
Any two quarterbacks at all? Well, obviously,
Brady is already in that lineup.
Brady is on fire, and then I would go with Matt Ryan after him.
Got it.
We got one last one if you want to get in quick for Roy.
Go ahead.
RBA, running back two and a flex. He has Matt Forte, Theo Riddick, and Terrence West.
Matt Forte, Theo Riddick, Terrence West. Terrence West is your guy.
Go, Roy.
There it is. All right, I want to thank everybody for being with us here today. Jamie Meter for coming in. Jeff Hobson from Bengals.com.
Such a brief visit from Jamie Meter.
It was a brief visit from Jamie Meter, but it was a good one. Quality, not quantity, Matt Wilhelm. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys for Matt Fontana and Matt Wilhelm. I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily.
On ESPN 850, WKNR Cleveland. Go Tribe.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.